I have to apologize for being a minute late.
But the wiring for sound caused complications for me.
As we look back over the history of mankind, we note a number of interesting but generally ignored facts. In fact, a lot of people who are very contemporary in their thinking would like to have these things from the past permanently ignored and to assume, if possible, that new conditions and the new world way of life will take care of the past and all the lessons that it would teach us. Unfortunately, this is not true. And we have all been faced again and again, and are still being faced, perhaps as never before, with a lot of unfinished business that has descended to us, really, from prehistoric times. The first thing we have to consider, for instance, is humanity itself. We think of the humanity as a kind of an intangible collective. But actually, today, it is 4.5 billion people, nearly all of whom are dedicated to one essential objective, and that is to do exactly as they please. They will support only that which supports them. They do not wish to have anyone interfere with their inalienable right to live out the pattern which they have established inside of themselves or have inherited from the past. Now, this problem is not easily solved. We not only have all these people, but according to one reference recently noted, there are 1,700 different languages and dialects we have to deal with among these people. We also find they are divided into many races, sub and sub-races, into nations, tribes, communities. This mass of human beings has never been brought together in any kind of an harmonic pattern. The ancients did not even know neighbors outside of their own boundaries. And within the boundaries, these ancient countries had one trouble after another. And the earth today is dotted frequently with the ruins of cities destroyed by the wars of neighbors. We have inherited all of this strange complication, a complication of people, each one of whom is an individual. Now, his individuality level may not be particularly high in all cases, but he is still an individual. He has his own inner life. He has his beliefs. Perhaps he borrowed them from his ancestors. Perhaps he inherited them from his educators, but he has them. And these ideas and these attitudes make him separate from practically all other human beings. If he wants friends, he selects others of similar general convictions. But even in the case of friendships, no two friends, though they are compatible, are identical. Thus we have this tremendous mass of humanity. More recent developments and progressive discoveries have given us a closer relationship with all these other people. This mass is now bound together with airplane routes, with industrial treaties, with political structures, with all kinds of man-made devices, hopefully intended to improve the conditions of these people. Actually, however, the great problem just remains as it was, something that we have never been able to work with satisfactorily. This great human power, this great mass of human ingenuity and inventiveness is pouring one discovery after another into our world of learning. But each of these individuals is himself trying to advance his own purposes. Well, at a comparatively early time, it became apparent that these various groups could not simply wander about. There had to be some kind of leadership. And leadership became the problem of antiquity and remains so to our time. Who were the leaders? Well, as we go back, perhaps to the very earliest time, the tribal chieftain, the elder, even maybe venerated dead, had power of leadership. In any event, there was some kind of an overstructure in which the oldest, the wisest, the strongest, or the most ambitious became the leader. And having gained this leadership, staked a territory and defended it. When his leadership was a little more secure, he began to eye enviously other people's territories. And he used his people to contribute to his own ambition for spreading his domain. This leadership problem also has many interesting variations. Naturally, we can assume that a tribe had to have a tribal father or a tribal leader. This was necessary because there had to be some way of artificially holding a group together. Possibly the earliest form of this was a combination of the tribal chief and the priest. A religious leader who had no political power but maintained that political power in another person. All this went on from time to time. In some countries, we had one type of leadership and some another. Probably one of the most progressive we ever had was right here on this continent, the Great League of the Iroquois, which came to a very dynamic decision. And the leaders of the Iroquois nation were all women. And the women instructed the senators or sachems how to vote. Of course, a little of that goes on now, but less obviously. Anyway, that was one way of solving it. And it did bring about a harmony between seven different nations or tribes of Indians. Others had variations on the theme. All had some way of trying to control or direct or organize people. Now, in order to do this successfully, you had to have laws. And, of course, the problem of laws has also become more and more confounded as the ages passed. The great laws of the earliest time were presumably divinely inspired. They were attributed, at least, to deity. It was assumed, therefore, that obedience to these laws constitute obedience to God. There was the Mosaic Code, the Decalogue. Then there was the additional Christian creed that was added to this at the Council of Nicaea. There was the Code of Hammurabi long ago, the Code Justinian, the Code Napoleon, and today more or less the Code Chaos. These different codes were intended to regulate conduct. Now, most people in different parts of the world, whether it was the Indians with the laws of Manu, or the Buddhists with their sutras, or the Chinese with their Confucian moral logs, these different systems were sufficient to do a great deal of good. And it gradually worked its way into the inner part of the individual that in some way these laws were essentially right. This probably was due to the fact that down deep inside of humanity, there was a level of unity that has seldom been explored. On the surface and on the objective side of life, everyone is different. But somewhere in the subjective side, the invisible causal sphere of things, there is a great deal more uniformity, a great deal more unity of purpose and conviction. Out of the various codes that have been given over the last several thousand years, there has developed what we might term a morality. This morality has stood the test of time. It is, so to say, proven that it was necessary to the salvation of human society. We now recognize the Ten Commandments as rather necessary. Whether we like them or not, whether we wish to obey them or not, we discover that conditions get worse to the degree that we disobey them. and that what little formal integration we have in society is based largely upon allegiance to a moral code. Now, this moral code has also changed in the course of time. In early days, morality was a local issue. Each nation had its own concepts of right and wrong. Today, however, with the communication systems that we have, morality has become worldwide, and we begin to think of it in terms of human rights. We think of it in the fact that all human beings must survive by the same general pattern, and that variation from this pattern can be fatal. It is possible, of course, that these different convictions and patterns of morality can be adapted to local conditions, but still the great pattern seemingly cannot be ignored. And anything or anyone who tries to ignore it comes to great troubles in the end. Nearly every disaster in history that has involved human activity has resulted from breaking the commandments. Somebody thought they were bigger than the law. Someone wanted more than their share. Someone decided to temper the plowshare back into a sword. Always the mistake was to break the laws that humanity had recognized from the beginning. So when we come now to our modern situation, we have inherited thousands of years of discords. We have inherited several very good codes of moral integrities. We have also come to a little better level of insights than our ancestors. We think we know more. We have more opportunities, more privileges, more conveniences, more innovations of knowledge than ever before. So there is a certain smugness about us. We do not want to look back again upon those old days when things were not as wonderful as they are now. But another look gives us another realization, that we are in greater danger today than in those times when things were less opulent. The more we have gained of knowledge, the more we have endangered our own survival. And with nuclear fission, we'd rather put the capstone on the whole thing. We have done that which apparently violates some law of some kind, not made by man, but inherent in the universal structure of which we are a part. We have not yet recognized the importance of going back to the great pattern of life itself, nature, the universe, to find the laws that are best for the advancement of human society. So we are making a number of very bad mistakes, and we are making them largely not because we have to make them, but because we choose to. Now, in these days, we are very anxious over political situations. We are much concerned over whether or not our political leadership is adequate. And most people who are in trouble will be very quick to blame leadership, whereas leadership, in turn, may be a little inclined to blame the people. But in any event, the problems that exist and dominate us at the present time indicate that leadership as we have it is not adequate. The next question is, why and how could we find a better or more adequate leadership? And I think the answer to that is, we're not going to. In other words, we're not going to find better leadership because it has to come out of the same tank with the rest of us. Unless that archangel descends in full glory, we are going to have to continue to develop means of governing ourselves more adequately. One way, of course, to develop leadership is to strengthen character. And here we come on an interesting subject of the philosophical turn in it. According to the Oriental peoples, Buddhists and Hindus, particularly ancient Hinduism, there's a kind of a saying that the human being has to die hundreds of times in order to learn to live once. And that, more or less, indicates the idea that the only way we're going to solve this problem is by gradually becoming weary of making the same mistakes.
we are going to gradually learn that the way we've been doing things doesn't pay, doesn't produce any of the results that we so desire and covet. But of course, if you happen to be a materialist and do not believe that we are going to return to this sphere at some later time, then we have a more complicated problem, because the materialist must accomplish all of it in one lifetime. He must rise from superlative ignorance to superlative wisdom in 60, 70, or 80 years. Well, it's very doubtful if we're going to find very many persons who can really accomplish this. And those who make a great success of it are usually assassinated, because the moment we begin to think above the level of the many turns on us. So we have this problem of leadership, and how are we going to get it? We have this problem of looking around for the perfect parental figure. What we need is the all-wise leader, all-loving, unselfish, untouched by personal ambitions, uncorrupted by opportunity. The individual who lives solely and totally for our good. This is very fine, except each different group of people has a different image of this person. Each, in with his own interests, wants this leadership to specialize in his needs. And as these needs are often in dramatic conflict with each other, the situation, again, is not entirely satisfactory. Every once in a while, however, we have a burst of some kind, a desperate effort to create a better cultural level. We had that experience around 1918, when we put through the Volstead Act, Prohibition. We decided we were going to save the average American citizen from alcoholism. It was a noble experiment, and we had to rescind it almost immediately. The answer being that the individuals whom we were hoping to save simply used bootleggers and set up one of the worst crime empires the world has ever known. Because the individual said, if I want a drink, I'm going to drink. And if I can't get it legally, I will get it illegally. So what are we going to do about this? We got bootleggers. Now, there is no doubt in the world that since that time, we have become more and more conscious of the dangers of alcoholism. But we have an upsurge of it now associated with the more dangerous implements and instruments of our social and mechanical age. Today, we are desperately worried over the problems of alcoholism and car driving. Accidents are mounting tremendously, and we have no answer for it. There'd be no answer. You can say, well, we put them in jail, so they'll go to jail. But when they come out, they'll keep on drinking, because they have the inalienable right to do what they please, and the purpose of the government is to please the inevitable and inalienable rights of 250 million human beings, each one of which has a somewhat different code as to what is an inalienable right. So it's pretty serious and pretty difficult and pretty disappointing. Now we can go to another field of activity. Here we are in the 20th century, one of the best educated countries in the world, and narcotics. We are trying some way to find how to prevent narcotics being imported into this country. The problem of trying to prevent this is probably beyond our possibility of to solve. We can slow it down. We can catch a number of these carriers and messengers, but the continued condition will prevail, because certain people want to do it, and they will fight to do it, and certain other people will legislate to keep on doing it because of the immense profits involved. And between the individual who wants what he wants and the other individual who wants to make as much money as he can, the problem is not going to be easily solved. And the fact that thousands of persons die from alcoholism or narcotics, and we see it everywhere in the schools and everywhere else, the individual still wishes to do what he wishes to do. And any law to prevent this is tyranny. And it will be no more than introduced before some will rise in mighty wrath to dispose of the law. It will be either watered down to nothing, or some special group will see that it gets nowhere. This is what happens all the way along. Armament, everything else. Among the sufferers are the United Nations, most of whose delegates have only the good of their own group in mind, and perhaps not even that. And the sincere ones are simply bowled over in the excitement and in the frustration of the whole situation. The answer then becomes pretty obvious. And that answer is that it's not going to be done by placing a government over people. In a family, now we get down to personal relationships. A parental situation exists. A parental relationship, however, today is weakening constantly. Children can hardly wait to get away from parental guidance. They consider any correction for their excesses or their attitudes to be tyranny. They are resolved and determined to do exactly what they please. And many of them are paying for this attitude with their lives, their sanity, and their health. But they are going to do it their way. A strict parent today is unpopular not only with his own family, but with the whole society in which he lives. Because we live in a society that is given over very largely to compromise and to letting things drift along as they are. And yet when they drift into trouble, then we're all worried. There seems to be no problem that we can face directly. Now the answer will have to ultimately be what it was in the first place and will always remain. We are here to learn. We are here to grow by experience. And furthermore, we are here to learn to become self-sustaining and self-guiding human beings. The only answer as to what our problems are today is the realization that the individual is the element of the cause and the actual element of the cure. The individual has to do it. Now, we may say that that's a long, slow process. It is, because we are so late in getting started at it. But it still remains that nearly every corruption or abuse of society can be corrected if private citizens do not contribute to that abuse or refuse to sustain it. Instead of trying to get something voted in by a group that will never be able to make it work even if they voted in, if the individual who doesn't like something sacrifices any pleasures he may get from this abuse and stands firmly for principles that are correct, we will find that in integrity we have the only answer to our problem. But at the moment, integrity is in short supply. Very much so. Nearly every factor that we know in society today is compromising integrity. It is choosing rather the course of least resistance. Integrity to many people means poverty. To many other people it means frustration. Integrity means the dismal and incredibly hard thing of doing what is right. This is just too much for the average individual to contemplate. And even if he doesn't wish to contemplate, he feels he has a vicarious excuse. Why should he work so hard when no one else is? When his neighbors are all exploiting each other, why should he be the only one who does not make something out of it? So the compromises go on and on and on. But the integrity of the person is the one thing that no dictator can stand against, that no corrupt system can change. The mass of humanity is the vox populi. It is the voice of God. And if it speaks correctly, problems will be solved. But if it keeps quiet and continues to cater to problems, they will never be solved. All over the world today, aggressive leaders, dictators, and so forth, are destroying people. They are corrupting ethical systems. They are tearing down religious convictions. They are doing everything possible to make the private citizen helpless. They want to take away from him any security of his own inner life and make him completely dependent upon a highly organized society which has the power to destroy him at any moment it chooses. Now, this is not possible to the person who really intends to do something with his own life. And I think for those who are religiously oriented and philosophically inclined, we must recognize the importance of at least a moderate effort to release ourselves from the despotism of our own appetites. If we do not do this, one of these days, it's going to be too late, at least for this culture. We're going to destroy something we've been thousands of years building. And a lot of people today are of the opinion that it cannot be prevented, that this destruction is going to come. It is going to come as long as we are looking for perfect leadership to carry us out of it. What we have to look for is the power within ourselves to defend our own integrities against the pressure of circumstances. Now, no one's going to be perfect. We don't ask anyone to be a martyr or something of that kind. But in many ways, we can begin day by day to improve a situation that we do not believe in or claim we do not believe in. Right now, the television industry is tied up in a mess. It is being divided into a number of private channels, many of which are being devoted largely to pornography. Now, there are laws being suggested, and of course, the moment we suggest that we improve the morality, there's a great cry goes up that we mustn't do things like that. The individual has an inalienable right to watch filth if he wants to. It's true. And the private stations with this type of program will continue to flourish and will have a large following unless we, as private citizens, turn them off. As soon as these stations do not have the financial support of people who say they want something better and then settle for something worse, as soon as the individual censors his own likes and dislikes, industry will answer. You can't legislate a correction as to what constitutes pornography, but each individual can decide what is good or bad taste and turn off the program. And if enough do that, the problem is solved. But it will never be solved from the top. We can elect anyone we want to do it, but it will never be done until we do it ourselves. And if we try to do it by force, we will simply turn it into the underground, and there it will remain as a sore within the system. The individual has to outgrow the attitudes which make these corruptions possible. And it's the same in almost every profession and every way of life. The individual who believes in principles, who has integrities within himself that he wants to sustain, must really go to work and live them. He must believe that his religion and his philosophy have something to do with his conduct. That if he believes in values, if he believes he is spiritually oriented, he must live accordingly. If he wants to see a better world, he must help to build it. He cannot wait for some great personality to come along and save the world for him. Until he deserves it, he shouldn't be saved. Until the person is willing to correct his own faults, he should not hope for securities, but he's hoping that some kind of legislative integrity will take care of him. It won't, because the very legislators working on this level are themselves insecure. They have not themselves proper integrations. So we need say that integrity is in rather short supply, and that is exactly what we mean. We find, as you all have found, increasing difficulty in finding honest labor, properly labeled goods, reasonable prices, and a willingness to meet the needs of peoples in a really religious manner. We are a nominally religious and a nominally Christian world, here at least, and most of Europe, and it is very much time now for us to begin to practice it. But the practicing of it is difficult because we have locked ourselves in a luxury system which we want to defend at all costs. We are quite unable to consider breaking down the barriers of expense which we ourselves have built up. We go to see a ball game, and we suddenly discover that it may cost us $50 for a ticket. We also learn that some of the players are getting $1 million or $2 million a year. Now, this is not necessary. We could correct this condition in almost no time by simply saying what as people, we think is a reasonable figure and not varying from it for any reason. Certainly, it may break up a system, but a system which itself is so unfair might as well be broken up because it is not in harmony with civilization or the survival of humanity. All exploitation is unreasonable, and it nearly all centers upon private citizens. And until these private citizens simply say we will not be exploited, the condition will remain. If, however, we do say when the price is right, we'll buy. When the goods are correct, we will think about it. When we are fairly treated, we will cooperate. On this basis, it would not be long before there'd be a major change in most human relationships. And this could be very well carried into the problem of military objectives. The whole idea of the military is simply the use of the power of the people to advance the ambitions of a few. And this situation goes on as long as the people will do it. Everything goes on as long as we remain in status quo. As long as our own integrities are not offended, there is nothing we're going to do about it. Now, what are the integrities that are most valuable to us at this particular time? One of the most important integrities is self-discipline. Without this, nothing is going to happen. Self-discipline is the power to regulate our own conduct. It is the possibility of living within our own means. It is the answer to the question of extravagance, by means of which a great part of our economic problem has developed. Self-discipline is the individual preferring to do what is right and quietly refusing to compromise his own principles. If we do not compromise our principles, and enough people remain reasonably honest, there would be a major change in our world affairs almost immediately. Now, for some reason, this particular thought has not gotten into the school system. And yet there is no place where the life of reason should be taught more completely. Young people should be taught that they are not intended simply to become parasites or become parasites on the cultural system to which they belong. Young people should be taught to be industrious, thoughtful. They should be taught to be kind and honorable. And with all the reading, writing, and arithmetic, I think that we should have a definite course in every public school upon basic integrities and what happens when you break them, and the horrible examples are plentiful to show. I noticed when I was in Japan the last time, I saw a plan for educational expansion among the Japanese public school system. And the main subject in the grammar school grades are in the following order: integrity, reading, writing, and arithmetic. In high school, integrity, algebra, and so forth. In the universities, integrity, physics, biology, and chemistry. Always the first course was integrity. Now, we can't say that they all live up to that either. We can't say anything like that. But for some mysterious word, in some way, they seem to be out-circling us in a number of directions. If their integrities are causing them to make better products, then we need their integrities immediately also. Because we cannot solve a problem by shutting out the honest labor of someone else in order to defend dishonest labor of our own. We've got to be as honorable as the person we deal with. And out of that, we can have a new relationship in life that is highly important and highly valuable. And in the dangerous age of our young people, the integrities are very, very vital. We see every day the lack of leadership, and we see the disregard for leadership. Now, this disregard for leadership is also available to us for observation in national affairs. One government after another is falling. They're falling so much that it seems as though they are like autumn leaves every year. They're just dropping because they are unable to control their people, and they are unable to decide on problems and on policies. The same is true in the family. Parents are losing control of their children. The children are turning from them. They are developing objectionable habits, and no one can do anything about it. I know a case recently in which a parent tried to correct a child for a very obvious delinquency, and the child simply walked off and left home. This is the type of thing we're developing, and there is no integrity in it. There's no effort of the individual to establish his own place in the plan of life. Actually, as far as we know, man is the most advanced visible form of life on the planet. He has the most privileged. He has the interior capacities for the most wonderful achievements in almost every field of life, in art, in music, in culture, literature, in science, philosophy, religion, all of these fields. He has the mental and emotional equipment to make valuable contributions. He has also within his nature a power of self-analysis. He can examine his own life. He can see what he's doing. He can contemplate the consequences of his own conduct. He has been equipped with a power to censor his own action. He is capable of knowing right from wrong in his own action and activity. He is not dependent upon someone else telling him. The human being is probably the most gifted creature that we will ever hear of in the course of our mortal existences. He is magnificently adapted to a tremendous destiny, and he is just throwing it away. He is throwing it away on things which are not worthy of him and which contribute nothing to his own good or the good of the society to which he belongs. Therefore, the problem is that the human being must grow up. There must be more strain of maturity appear. There's got to be something to indicate that we have passed a period of adolescence in which there was nothing in the world but fun. We also have to get over the idea that there is infinite money to do anything we want to with. All these ideas are the result of bad thinking and lack of facts. They are the result of the individual simply falling into an emotional network of appetites. If he continues with it, he will see the ruin of his world. But with a little hard thinking and a little hard work, we also have the ever-present remedy that no one can take away from us. And that remedy is the power to heal ourselves, to cure the ailments in our own natures which have brought us to this emergency. Man has the power to outgrow his own weakness. He has the natural ability to grow into his own maturity. And by doing this, and by achieving in these areas, he has the right to solve his problems. So we're going on now from day to day. Everybody's got a little bit of an idea of some kind. A lot of people are trying hard. They're all working with the idea if we can only get a group of people to see it. It's not only that. It's not that primarily we've got to get the individual himself to see it. Then he can form groups. But to form groups out of people by merely word of mouth conversion, in which all the members remain just what they were before, and make the same mistakes they've been making for ages, is not going to solve anything. Solution lies in the individual forming a group because he himself not only understands the problem, but can prove clearly that he is personally applying what understanding he does possess to his own daily living. If he is still nagging with his neighbors, he is not a good candidate for membership in the United Nations. If he cannot get along with races or religions, he's not a good candidate for any type of organization that is seeking to unite dissonant factions. If he is full of prejudice, social, religious, or cultural, if his antagonisms go through every stratum of society, and if he loves to argue almost any subject that comes along, always in terms of benefit to himself, then he is not a good candidate for anything. It's no use putting millions of those people together. Because the only thing you might be able to gain by that would be the one other perhaps helpful thought that large numbers of them would exterminate each other. This might be a solution to something, perhaps overpopulation. But it would be no answer to anything. The problem is that the housewife, the child, the businessman, the parent, the leaders in every smaller field of activity, the scoutmaster and his members of his little group, all these people have got to live it. They've got to move into a world in which they begin to forgive each other their faults and build upon a common ground. They've got to be very careful to make sure that when they make a promise, they keep it, even the most simple thing. They must be sure that when they weigh the pound, they do not weigh their thumb with it. They've got to do the thing correctly. They've got to be honorable and honest. And when they have a day's work, they can't spend half of it walking around doing nothing. No person with these weaknesses can contribute to the improvement of the society to which he belongs. And yet it is the individual who is the only source of that improvement. If he does not improve, society will not. No matter of education will solve him, the situation. Some of the best educated people today are the worst rogues, and will continue to do so as they do. Education gives them skill in deceit. And there is no answer to this except the development of a corresponding integrity in themselves.